it's going to have a major impact because I see substantial changes coming that will completely alter the way that we're used to seeing tax done in the U.S.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. This is episode number 76. Weekly, we talk with commercial real estate investors and professionals who provide insight and knowledge that can help investors grow their real estate portfolio. Whether you're a veteran investor or you've been thinking about investing, we're here to help and we're glad you're here. My name is Jader and Gross. Thanks for joining us today. In just a minute, we're going to speak with returning guest Jonathan McGuire. Jonathan is a real estate consultant with Aldrich Advisors. We talk about some of the dramatic changes that are real possibilities with the Republican Congress's blueprint for tax reform, referred to as a better way. These include the elimination of the interest expense deduction, elimination of the depreciation, also elimination of the 1031 exchange, and more. But first, if you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure you subscribe and leave a 5-star review. When you do subscribe, you can listen to the show whenever and wherever you choose. Also, are you on Facebook? Are you on Twitter? Are you on LinkedIn? If so, look me up. It's the letter J, Darren, D-A-R-R-I-N, Gross, G-R-O-S-S. And if you're on LinkedIn, be sure to join our group, Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. It's a great group to network with real estate professionals. So go ahead and reach out and let's connect. And be sure to let me know that you listen to the podcast. And as always, if you do have a deal that you want to talk about or if you have an insurance question, go ahead and get in touch with me and I'll do all I can to help. All right, let's get on with the show. Today on the call, we're fortunate to have a prior guest, returning guest, Jonathan McGuire. Jonathan is a CPA on the real estate team with Aldrich CPAs and Consultants, formerly known as AKT. And really excited to speak with Jonathan today. We're going to get into what is the real estate tax world going to look like with the Trump administration, the newly elected and newly installed President Trump and the Republican House and the Republican Senate. So if you are a real estate investor and you've gotten used to some of the ways of writing down or expensing or amortizing, buckle up and hang on, because I can tell you things are looking different, and Jonathan's going to help us with that. So first, Jonathan, welcome back. So good to have you here. Always enjoy having you.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back. Had really fun with this the last time, so let's just go into it.
Do it again, huh? All right. Well, and just to remind our listeners real quick, like I said, you're with Aldrich CPAs and Consultants, and why don't you give the listeners a little bit about your background, how you got to Aldrich CPAs and Consultants?
Well, I've been at Aldrich for about 2 years now, a little over 2 years. I originally came from another CPA firm up in Seattle, where I was there for 3 years, and just getting into the things. But prior to that, I got my master's in taxation from the University of Denver in 2011. I've been a CPA since June or July of 2013, and I've my practice or area of practice that I've concentrated in has been within real estate, as well as also being more in line with being a fixed asset consultant dealing with depreciation, the repair regs, and other things like that.
All that fun stuff that may go crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, well, let's start here. And You know, I think it's important to recognize that not everybody voted for Trump, nor the Republicans or the Democrats. However you voted, regardless, it's a new administration and new day in Washington. And so with the Republican House and Senate and Trump, things look to change. And you provided an outline, and thank you for doing that, because it's clear you're in touch with what we're looking at. And I'm just kind of curious, because, you know, one of the things that out of every thing I tune into now, the Obamacare is the first thing that comes out of everybody's mouth. It's gone. It's gone. It's gone. Don't know that that has any direct effect on the real estate side of things, per se, but it's clearly setting a tone for what they're hoping to do. Do you have any?
Yeah. Thoughts? Yeah. With the repeal of Obamacare, that from like the insurance company perspective, that's going to free up the marketplace because it's going to deregulate it, and they're going to be able to do more of what they were doing before. But the thing is there's all of this talk about repeal and replace. So what's the replacement? Is it going to be replacing with nothing? Is it going to be a new social program? Like that still remains to be seen.
Right.
But two particular things though that will impact primarily on wage earners and then investors. So in our case, real estate investors, there's that net investment income tax of 3.8%, as well as this 0.9% Medicare surcharge on wages above 200,000 for single filers or 250,000 for married filing jointly. But those two things potentially are – those would go away because that's – those two things right there is the reason why Chief Justice Roberts, in his opinion, called the Affordable Care Act a tax, and thus why it was able to withstand in the Supreme Court and not fall to the Commerce Clause. So it is ironic that it was not passed being a tax, yet the reason why it was upheld in Supreme Court is the federal government's power to impose a tax. And so it's, you know, bait and switch there maybe, but I mean.
Yeah, and or even just the intended versus unintended consequence or how that played out there. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let's move past that because I think Obamacare is, I know it's clearly what is driving the news cycles right now, but what we're kind of more focused and want to talk and get into is more about how the administration's view and you know the effects of their tax plans going to have on real estate. And so tax reform, what are we talking about here?
So between the Republicans and Congress and then Trump as president and his administration, kind of what they're planning to do right now, it's kind of a three-pronged goals in mind with tax reform, one of which is to promote growth and investment. So by turning back regulations, they're going to be broadening the tax base, which means lowering rates. They're going to be able to potentially push more money back into the economy. So it's going to be – people are going to be able to, you know – with their investments have a longer growth span, or they're going to be more pro-growth, looking for the long-term investment structure. So part of that too is to get away from the short-term, you know, like I'm going to buy, flip, and go short-term, like make the quick buck. That kind of idea is going to be going away, I think, because Congress wants to promote the growth, promote the investment in the economy to have long-term sustainable growth, so that way there's a more solid, consistent tax base, and so, they can count on the income better.
So does that speak more to a capital gains tax then? Because is that not the longer term is kind of that lower tax rate, whereas the short term under a year is ordinary income? Is that what we're talking about?
yeah, that's part of it, because it's going to, I mean, they're going to expect to see a little bit more capital gain income, I think, because there's going to be less short-term deals going on. I mean, unless the business happens to drive that due to the economics of their particular situation. But the idea is to have that long-term growth set in place. And the other part of it, too, is by lowering the overall tax rates for both ordinary and capital gains, they're going to be able to have even more money going into the economy, which potentially could broaden the tax base and be, from their perspective, it's going to be more of a revenue neutral change. But so, I mean, take it which way you will on how you view tax policy, but that's their intended goal and effect.
Huh. Well, I always thought the longer there was like the penalty on the short term thing, and so if you reduce the short term tax, it seems like it would almost be the whatever penalty there is right now for a ordinary income tax would be reduced, which would almost seem like it might promote more of the in and out, would it not? Or am I missing something?
One of the things is when we get into what the tax rates are going to be, we'll see that like the middle class is actually going to see a tax break potentially.
Okay.
There will be a greater tax break on the upper class, and there might be a little bit more of a tax increase potentially on the lower class if they have investment income.
Okay.
So that's kind of where it's making sure everybody's, you know, contributing to the tax system and not taking the holiday from paying anything.
Okay. All right. So the I'm just trying to look down here. And so is that the essential, the nut of the reform, kind of the what you see in this as far as that?
They're trying to be pro growth, pro investment in the economy, and also in competitiveness. That way, they're bringing more money back to the U.S. So there's going to be less foreign investment. So they want to increase manufacturing jobs, infrastructure. That's kind of one of the big themes that's coming out of both administration, or the Congress and the administration.
Gotcha. And you mentioned the foreign. Do you see that as kind of a ollie, all come free, kind of a bring that money back into the States? Is that really kind of where it's coming?
I got a feeling there's going to be like a one-time exemption to, you know, for a company, say, like Apple, to be able to take all their cash that's stored over in whatever country, bring it back, repatriate it without any sort of penalty or fee of that, so that way it's not taxed. That way, that cash is free up to be used and invested in the U.S. economy. That is also hopefully going to become more competitive by what the Republicans have planned in the House and Senate for tax reform.
Got it. So let's talk a little bit about the House and the Republican blueprint. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of that?
The better way is kind of the Republicans' broad stroke approach to how they want to have the next 2 years go in Congress and beyond with the new Trump administration. And that one of the major pieces of that, but it's not the only piece, is doing a tax reform. And it's going to have a major impact, because I see substantial changes coming that will completely alter the way that we're used to seeing tax done in the U.S.
Okay. And can you kind of shine some light on what you expect with that, as far as tax reform is always kind of a funny thing. It's usually whatever mm-hmm. one party was in is now going to say, we're going to undo what they did, or I mean, it's the yin and the yang, or the back and the forth of it all. Mm-hmm. Can you shed some light on what the plan entails?
Yeah. So I've got a outline of a bunch of the things that the Republicans want to do in their Better Way blueprint. The first major one is a marginal rate reduction, and it's going to take place to at the corporate level, at the individual level, and then they're also going to bring in a special rate for active small business owners. So the first one, not necessarily going to apply to real estate that much, but they're going to reduce the marginal rate for corporations from 34% at the highest tax bracket down to 20%. So that's a huge rate drop, and that's to bring the U.S. Corporate tax more in line with the rest of the world.
Let me ask you real quick, because I don't want to get all wound up in this, but I do want to make a quick question. It's always been expressed to me that the corporate tax rate was not as significant, especially not like with an S corp where all of that gets paid out to the shareholders. So we're talking about more of your C corp level.
Yes,
and it's based on your retained earnings. Is that what we're talking about, or?
Yeah, it's still an income tax.
Okay.
So it's going to be a 20% rate at the highest rate. I don't know what the exact brackets are being proposed, but they've just mentioned that 20% would be the highest.
Got it. Well, that's significant. Going from 35 to 20, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. So and that's part of the reason too is with one of the themes of improving competitiveness. This is going to improve competitiveness for the larger corporations across the world, because we're going to be able to, you know, bring more of that money back home, and we'll probably hopefully see some exports rise. Where it's going to hurt is retailers who are importing from other countries.
And gotcha.
So the real driver behind this is trying to get manufacturing jobs increase, create more competitiveness for American products.
Sure. Well, and indirectly, that does touch real estate. I mean, if you're bringing more jobs and more facilities and more people, back to the U.S. to do more, that's going to require more facilities and housing for all of that. So. There's kind of your driver there.
Yeah, it could change the type of housing that we're seeing built. You'll probably see more industrial space being built to house this new boom in the going back to the roots of the American dream, which is, you know, working to build that on that family with that honest wage, honest day's work, and be less on that service-sized retailer consumer side.
Gotcha. All right. So that's the corporate tax. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the individual.
Yes. So currently the individual rate, the highest rate, is 39.3% or 39.4%. What they want to do is bring it down to 33%. And they're going to collapse 7 tax brackets down into 3 brackets. So the 7 brackets range from 10% all the way up to that 39.34%. What it's going to turn into is kind of a combination. It's either 10 or 15% at the lowest rate, 25% for the middle class, and then the rich are going to have a 33%
rate. All right. So the top bracket from 39 down to 33, essentially, is that kind of the sum of that? And is there much move in the middle? Is the 25? What's the middle right now?
Right now, most taxpayers are paying like a 15 or 25% rate. What you'll see though is that 28% rate that exists in the current seven brackets that will get collapsed down probably to that 25. So the kind of more of your upper middle class and wage earners. So, you know, late 30s, early 40s professionals, like the kind of those people in that stage of life, they're going to see a little bit of a tax break to see more. And that way they can free up more money to have that investment, save more for retirement and some other alternatives.
All right. And then you mentioned this special class for active owners, was it?
Yes. So, there's a special 25% rate that they're proposing for individuals that have an active pass-through trader business. So what that is a trader business that files via either a partnership or an S-corp. So that individual is getting a K-1 with their information, with their tax information from this business that they run, and subsequently reporting that on their 1040.
Okay. So would you think, would a lot of real estate investors fall into that?
I don't think the investors will, because one key is, even though they may have they may actively manage real estate, they may not rise to the level of a trader business.
Gotcha.
Because generally, rental income is deemed to be it's under one of the three categories. There's earned income, which is your wages.
Right.
There's portfolio, which is interest, dividends, capital gains, all your investment income. And then there's a third category, which is passive. And most real estate investors would fall under the passive. So it's not technically a trader business. For it to be a trader business, though, you could be under the current rules. There's this what's called a real estate professional, and it's a certain designation to where your activity in real estate rises to the level of a trader business.
Gotcha. Is that I was talking with somebody else about this. Is that where the amount of hours spent in the business in order to go from passive to active?
Yes. There's a different rule from going from passive to non-passive, and then there's another level from going from that non-passive to a real estate professional. So to be non-passive, there's got to be there's six or seven different rules, but the most common is, do I have 500 hours involved in that trader business so it would become active, because it's not passive. But for it to rise to the level of a trader business as a real estate professional, you need to have either a combination of 750 hours, and more than half of your income must be generated from those real estate activities. And that could be involved in just managing real estate. It could be developing it in construction, property management, any of those sort of real estate intensive activities.
All right. So that's the distinguishing kind of timeline or requirement to go from passive to active. And this active pass-through tax class. So if you were an active, let's say you passed that 750 hours, was that the
yes.
active line? So
yes.
750 hours divided by 52 weeks. What are you, 15 hours a week kind of roughly?
I think so.
Okay. So if you're actively engaged, then you would be eligible for this 25% mm-hmm. tax. And would that have a cap as far as your earnings go? Or is that?
As far as I know right now, from what I've read, it's unlimited right now.
Hmm.
So if it's to help small business owners, really it's there because it's not going to be particularly aimed at real estate, but rather, the small business entrepreneur sure. that wants to build their business, have a preferred tax rate because they're not that big corporate entity, and they're investing hypothetically into the economy with their own money, providing jobs. There's kind of a political play with there.
Right.
It's going to be good for those small tax or small businesses.
Sure. Well, and I think as I'm listening and kind of thinking through this, if you're holding real estate in an LLC mm-hmm. anyway, would that go more towards the, would that be your, it's not corporate tax, but what tax would you be in there? Would it still be in that active pass-through tax? Because that's at the individual level, is it not?
Yes, correct. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're an individual who owns real estate through a partnership or by chance an S corp, you will be able to receive that preferential rate, assuming you meet the requirement of being active.
Otherwise, it's going to be taxed at your individual level based on the pass through, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. All right. So those are your tax rate reductions. Mm-hmm. Curious about this next one you've got written down here, 50% exclusion. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah. So one thing that you're going to see is there's no longer going to be a capital gains tax rate. What's going to happen is they're going to take capital gains or the idea of the capital gains tax and turn it into a 50% exclusion of investment income taxed at ordinary rates. So if you have $1 million of investment income, only $500,000 of that is going to be taxed, and it will be taxed at your, in this case, the 33% rate.
Interesting. So how would that compare is in today, if you had the full million and you had the capital gains, what's the capital gains rate?
So there's three potential rates that you could be paying right now. You could be paying 0%, which it's because you don't have a whole lot of other income. Normally you'll see 15%, and then for big capital gains, there's a 20% threshold. By doing this, this 50% exclusion, you'll see the rates, because you're only being taxed on half the income, therefore half of your ordinary tax rate. So you would see either a 5%, a 12.5%, or a 16.5%. So you'll see this a little bit of a reduction on your capital gains going forward.
All right. Slow down here 1 second.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure I understand this. So if today I had the and let's just say if I'm in the higher tax bracket. So you earlier just said 39%. 39.4% tax bracket.
Yeah.
$1 million sale, I've got $1 million gain. Mm-hmm. Today, that capital gains rate, what would that $1 million be if I'm in that 39% income bracket?
That would be taxed at in current day's rates, would be taxed at 20% and potentially have that also that 3.8% net investment income tax surcharge. That's part of Obamacare.
Okay, so essentially a 23% tax rate on $1 million. So $230,000, round numbers. Mm-hmm. So going forward, if we do this, we have $1 million sale or $1 million gain. Mm-hmm. We've got a 50% pass through. So now we've dropped the taxable income to $500,000. Mm-hmm. What's the rate then?
The rate there would then be 33% on $500,000, which would come to about $165,000.
Okay, so significant savings then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's interesting. I was kind of curious about that. So, and how certain are you that as we go through these things, if we had to gauge from a high degree of certainty to a low, if we said, 10 on the high degree and 1 on the low, as far as the blueprint, the better way, what's your degree of certainty that's going to pass?
I'd say right now, as they don't have the formal legislation written yet, but with what they're proposing, having everything go through as is, I'd say there's probably about a 65 to 70% chance certainty. So there's definitely stuff coming.
Right.
It's just like the corporate rate and the individual rate. I am pretty sure that those are set in stone. The 25% active pass through, I don't really know yet. That one I can't really speak to. With the 50% exclusion from investment income, with the other things that they're proposing, I would say that's, if they decide to go that route, it's a done deal. That's the way it's going to be going forward.
Got it. And all this kind of goes back to support the keep the money moving. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what drives the economy, is money moving. So if you can lower the tax from those that have the ability to make the moves, then that'll keep everybody else, or keep the money moving, the opportunity for others to earn a bit of that. So got that. All right. So you've got cost recovery down here. What are we talking about here? Because as I look at your notes here, this one's got my attention here.
Yes. So one thing that Republicans are proposing in the House and Senate, or at least in the House, is to replace our current system of depreciation with immediate expensing. So going back to the days in 2011 with 100% bonus depreciation. The kicker is that this doesn't just apply to equipment, furnitures, and fixtures. This applies to building improvements and buildings, which is huge.
Yeah, with a capital H. I mean,
yes. That's huge, huge.
Yeah. Well, and like we were talking just before we got on the call here, you know, last time you and I got together, all we were talking about was the repair regulations and how that tied in directly to the ability to or the requirement to depreciate various things on different schedules and the whole kind of break your building apart and the cost segregation study kind of thing. So I guess my first question is what happens with all of that? Because if I just bought a building and I just paid for a cost segregation study and I'm all excited that I'm going to get some accelerated depreciation, and now you're telling me that, hey, there's a new day. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example or kind of walk us through the comparison? What should somebody expect?
Yeah, so one little caveat beforehand, land, it will still be excluded from this proposed 100% expensing. So land will still stay as land.
Still can't depreciate the land, gosh darn it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I wanted to highlight that so we can – that's static. So kind of an idea right now is – so let's say you have $1 million building. Currently, when you capitalize that, you're going to depreciate it over either 27 and a half years if it's residential or 39 years if it's commercial. So a very long recovery period. We're looking at, what is that, 30,000 a year on that $1 million that you're being able to recapture. And it takes forever. You're probably not going to hold on to it. And it for that long. And one thing though too is it's going to impact your cash flow. And so because of not having this huge deduction up front, which is the alternative 100%, so you take $1 million expense in the first year, you're having to recover this over 27 and a half or 39 years. So it makes the tax be recognizable currently over this 39 year span, whereas you might pay no tax for 5, 6, 7, maybe 20 years, and then you'll have something in it going forward.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait. Yeah. So I just want to make sure I understand this, because right now the way I understand it, you gave the was it 27 and a half versus 39 year depreciation schedule. Mm-hmm. And if you don't go into a cost segregation study, you're on a straight line, right? Mm-hmm. So you just take that and divide it. Let's just use that for example right now.
Yeah.
So if I go buy that $1 million building, and are you saying that in year one I just get to expense that and there's no tax?
Yeah, you get to expense it year one, and then if you have any loss left over, you're going to be carrying that forward.
Really? So yeah. So is that essentially the difference? Because if you I mean, first of all, like, so what we need to reiterate is that the whole depreciation thing has always been kind of a paper loss anyway. There's no the building's performing. I mean, in most cases, the building is performing. It's generating income, unless I guess if you own and occupy the building and you know whatever. But let's just stay with the topic. It's it's producing income, and what you're essentially doing is you're taking a paper expense and you're reducing that income each year. Mm-hmm. And so by doing this, if I buy the building in year one, mm-hmm. and I have this $1 million purchase, or a quote loss because my rents weren't more than $1 million for that 1 year, right? Mm-hmm. So would there be a cap on how much of a loss you could take? Because, or would you carry, because you mentioned carrying those expenses mm-hmm. forward? Is that the
offset? So the cap on the loss, so you would reduce your income down to zero for the current year if your loss was in excess of your other income okay. from that property or on your actual tax return.
All right.
Going forward, if you had that excess loss, you would be able to carry that forward. It would be a net operating loss.
Okay. So just in round numbers, if let's say we bought $1 million building, we got $100,000 annual rents. Mm-hmm. Forget about all the other expenses, but let's just say $100,000 in rents. I got a $900,000 negative. Mm-hmm. Carried that $900 forward. Is it mm-hmm. so? Essentially, just in simple terms, for 10 years you could run with zero income on
yes.
it.
Okay. Yeah, for tax purposes.
Okay.
Because like on like a gap, so like on a book depreciation. If you have like financial statements that you're doing that are like reviewed or audited, that wouldn't be allowed. You'd have to capitalize it on a book. And so for tax, you'll have this huge tax loss or no tax for a bunch of years. But for book, you might actually have a gain.
Right, right. Wait a minute here. So but book is more of the assets worth, right? I mean, you're not. You wouldn't pay taxes on the book, would you?
No. Okay. What I was referring to is like you're depreciating the building for on your financial statements over 20 years.
Right.
So that $1 million, you're getting a $50,000 deduction. So if you had that $100,000 of income a year, $50,000 depreciation deduction, you'd have $50,000 of book income. But for tax purposes, you'll have zero.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I don't know if this is the right place, but I'm always been kind of, and this is one of these things where you're all excited about taking the depreciation, cause it, increases your cash flow. But when you go to sell that building, then you've got either 1031 because there's that recapture. Would mm-hmm. this, model do away with that recapture?
Right now, they're currently silent on how it's going to work, but a lot of tax experts that are lobbying in Congress right now, kind of what they're hearing is that everything that gets expensed in that first year potentially could be recaptured. So going back to that $1 million example, let's say you expense it all in the first year. 15 years down the line, you sell it for $1.5 million. That first million that you expensed, which you took an ordinary deduction for at the ordinary tax rate, would have to be recaptured at an ordinary tax rate. That's what's commonly referred to as 1245 gain. Then that excess gain on top of that, that extra $500,000, would be taxed as a capital gain. And so going forward, if the tax reform as is passes, that $500,000 would be 50% excluded, be taxed at $250,000.
Gotcha. So I get the gain part. I just want to make sure I understand the $1 million when you go to recapture that. Mm-hmm. So if I've taken that as an expense and mm-hmm. for like I said, 15 years, so essentially because is it considered a depreciation or is it just a loss for those years? Is that how that?
It's just considered an expense and then thus a loss because it's a net operating loss going forward.
Okay, but when you go and sell the building and you made money, mm-hmm. then you've mm-hmm. got to recapture that loss.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any talk of how the 1031 still come into play?
Actually, another thing that apparently has also been in the works for a while is they want to do a full repeal of Section 1031. And that actually is going back pre Trump being elected. This is something that they've wanted to do for years, apparently, which is surprising to me, because you'd think Republicans, they want to be pro-growth, you know, not, you know, let the people not pay tax that are selling their buildings, you know, reduce everything. But this is actually one of the things on the chopping blocks as part of reducing overall tax rates.
So, I mean, right now as it stands, if you sell a property and you've got a gain and you recapture that depreciation, mm-hmm. Unless you roll into a like mm-hmm. property or like mm-hmm. asset with a larger value, you're going to pay that. You're going to recapture the depreciation, mm-hmm. right? Otherwise, you can roll it into the next property and continue on, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So I guess I'm kind of curious, is it easy enough that you can compare and contrast, you know, rolling from one as opposed to just a straight tax, or is it just simply it wouldn't be there?
It's simply the 1031 exchange will not be there. Wow. That's it. They're just flat out wanting to get rid of it. Now, Congress is silent in the better way in this blueprint plan that they have. But it is well known within the sphere of political influence in D.C. that this is a big item that's on the chopping block.
What on our scale of 1 to 10, do you have any kind of feel for likelihood of that?
I'd say somewhere between a 7 and an 8.
That really?
So that's could likely be going away. Yeah.
There. Wow.
I mean, I hope they don't. One thing to highlight is Trump actually is not in favor of this. But
it's kind of funny when you talk about a guy that's in real estate. I would be curious if he'd be.
He's definitely not for this. This is from the Congress perspective. So I got a feeling if they pass tax reform with removal and repeal of Section 1031, Trump likely could veto the bill, but it's something that, you know, the Democrats will probably partner with the Republicans with, and they could have that 67% majority vote on this to override the veto to get rid of Section 1031.
Wow. Well, and the fact you're going 7-8 on that, sounds like it's pretty well thought out, and there's it's got some legs, huh?
It definitely has some legs from what I've heard. I give that 20-30% chance of it not happening, and I hope I'm on that wrong side right now that it's going to be the 20-30% chance of it staying.
What would be the driving force to get rid of the 1031?
The primary thing is having revenue neutral tax reform. And so the idea is to, along with reducing rates, reducing the amount of income that's taxable for that is investment income, and also with, you know, 100% cost recovery. So 100%, like that 100% bonus depreciation, you got to have some things that get eliminated to keep revenue neutral for the U.S.
Sure. Okay, let's just carry this example one step further. So let's just stay with our $1 million building. We sell it 15 years down the road. We recapture that. But now we buy a $2 million building. Okay, mm-hmm. So now I've got a $2 million expense year one. Mm-hmm. Is this trading? I mean, because mm-hmm. I've got this income. Mm-hmm. I bought something larger. I've got a new, bigger expense. Is it essentially at that point a neutral thing?
Yeah, because you'd have that let's say you had that $1 million building that you sold and then bought into a new one for $2 million, you're going to expense that $2 million building in the first year.
Right.
And reduce that $1 million in tax. Therefore, Section 1031, it's more moot. Or less, is still it's moot.
Yeah.
If assuming you go into a building that is at equal or greater value than the building you just sold.
Well, and even if you didn't, you know, if you went in something less, you wouldn't be as bound to go bigger. You know, you could go, as I'm sitting there talking to you and thinking about it, you have a little bit more flexibility from that. And then your gain would be taxed at that new reduced rate.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Might not all be bad. I think it's more a matter of the change kind of thing. If you're committed to real estate as an investment, and that's your vehicle, and that's what you know and you like and you trust, it may not be as significant. Because I guess I think where it sounds probably most confusing and most troubling is if you've been depreciating something for a number of years and you go to sell it. Is there any kind of a gotcha for going back and recapturing that? Or is it at that point they just go, well, you bought it for this, you sell it for that. You better get into something bigger or pay the tax. I mean, is it that simple?
It's pretty much that simple. Like, when they say they want to have taxes done on a postcard, like they legitimately are trying to simplify things to be at a, not necessarily going to be filled out on a postcard, but the idea, the attitude behind it is to really simplify, make it easier to comply with and understand. And in a way, it's going to be more fair because everybody's going to be able to understand and fully comprehend what their tax consequences are. Wow. You're not going to, you don't have to go, I mean, I hate to say this, but you don't have to go to a CPA to go through like, what's my income tax going to be? It's going to be a lot simpler now because you can look at the postcard.
Right. Well, I guess what'll be interesting is just, when you start talking about, taking away people's livelihood as to how powerful their lobby is to say, hey, wait a minute here.
Yeah. I mean, by no means is it going to eliminate CPAs because there's all other tax things and like due diligence and stuff that has to happen with transactions. And
well, I'm thinking more about your when we talked before about these repair regulations, about the cost segregation study companies.
And yeah.
That to me would be more of a sensitive topic there if you're in that line of work.
I'm pretty sure that it would put cost segregation studies out of business. That whole industry and real estate would go away.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we get, and I guess the only thing that I just wanted to come back on that is that if you do look at it and you go from one property to the next property, it's not as traumatic as, oh my God, they took it away kind of thing. Everything keeps moving. Just a little bit less of a year-to-year strategy of accounting for and monkeying with all the numbers there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Now here's one. This has got. One of the first things I learned about buying real estate and borrowing money was the interest write-off.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you're thinking or what you're hearing there.
So right now in this blueprint, they want to eliminate the deductibility of business interest expense. So
business, is that interest on real estate loans as well, or?
Yes, except with the exception of personal residences, they will end up eliminating interest just across the board from deductibility.
Okay, now we got to ask the question, what's your degree of certainty on that? Because that is a big thing that drives the whole real estate.
That's probably about a 3 or a 4.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen. It will upset a lot of people.
Well, that hits every homeowner across the spectrum there, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're borrowing money to buy.
With the exception of the home mortgage interest deduction on, like, okay. which is, yeah, that's been not, carved out.
Okay, that one's out. But even so, though, I mean, how much real estate, doesn't make money without the interest write-off?
Part of the reason why they want to do this is there's growing skepticism about people that are leveraging debt, and are they really, practicing fair business? Are they just trying to make an extra buck on somebody else's money? And so you're going to see it's going to – the other part of it too is, because you're getting that 50% exclusion on interest income, they got to eliminate some sort of deduction that you're currently taking to keep the tax rate or tax revenue neutral.
Okay, we got to walk through an example here quick. Mm-hmm. So you buy a building, $1 million. Mm-hmm. You got $100,000 annual income. Mm-hmm. So the mortgage on that $800,000-ish, mm-hmm. I don't know, $4,500. You're probably $4,000 a month in interest. So it's about $50,000 a year in interest. Mm-hmm. Help me understand how that's going to play out.
So what will happen is that interest deduction will go away. Currently, you can take it. It reduces your net income and your net taxable income. Now, on the proposed side of what they want to do, that $50,000 of interest that you paid, you no longer get a deduction for.
Really? So it's not even an operating expense. It just doesn't
poof, gone. Yeah.
So you went from having a, and just as an easy rule of thumb, if you've got 50% operating expenses in real estate, so you go from $100,000 in income, $50,000 in expenses, and $50,000 in carrying cost. You've gone to a zero. You've got zero. Mm-hmm. Where's the incentive?
that's where the change is. And so, I mean, the one thing that you have that is going for you is you will have that 100% immediate expensing, but really comparing it right now, that's just a timing difference. So if you were to depreciate the building under the current system over the entire 39-year period, after 39 years, it's apples and apples. It's just the method of getting there is different.
Okay, so it almost seems like this new method would promote kind of a shorter hold as opposed to a longer hold. Mm-hmm. Because even if you go to refinance a property, there's not going to be incentive to refinance a property unless you get some killer interest rate. Mm-hmm. But interesting, because right now I would say that the value of the loan is most valuable in those first 5 years for both the lender and the borrower, right? Mm-hmm. Based on the write-off of the interest and the interest that the lender is collecting. Mm-hmm. But if you go to this new model, that the incentive to refinance will only be based on the covenants of the loan saying, hey, in 5 years you got to redo, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that has a low chance of happening, because that's definitely something that Trump doesn't like, from what I've heard. But we'll see what happens on that.
Well, it seems like it would have some complications with just the capital markets.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know. It seems like there's incentive right now to refinance based on the the value of a new loan to kind of reset your interest write-off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing, though, is it's going to favor people that are cash rich, that can sell. self-finance.
Yeah. No, I think that's really at the end of the day what mm-hmm. they have to, at least I would think, take into mm-hmm. consideration is how many people use leverage to buy real estate mm-hmm. As opposed to just pay cash.
And it's a pretty substantial percentage that do that. I don't know what it is, but everybody does it. So
yeah, no, I would say it's you know, it's unless you're a you know, an insurance company or some sort of a, you know, REIT or something like that. I mean, that's, or maybe that would promote syndication or I don't know, or some sort of a new hybrid of syndication. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So mm-hmm. interesting. All right. So let's talk about the, losses. We've been talking a little bit about it. Mm. You've mentioned we can carry them forward. Am I hearing you right?
Yes. So I'll just back up a little bit with a net operating loss. Right now, you have a mandatory 2-year carry back period, and then you can carry forward it 20 years if you're a C corporation, or indefinitely if you're an individual. So because that's where the NOL would be housed. You can elect to not carry back the NOL 2 years, and that's an irrevocable election, I think. But what they want to do is change it to where you're just carrying losses forward, and it's indefinite for both C corporations and individuals.
Okay. So if you do have any kind of income, you always have whatever losses historically you can bring forward and minimize your tax.
Yes. So. And one caveat that's kind of a little difference is they're going to peg your net operating losses for inflation. So okay. Your loss will grow with the passing of time if you don't utilize it. Additionally, you're going to have a 90% limitation. So in the given year, say you have $100,000 of income, they're going to limit the amount of loss that you can take to 90%. So 90, you would 000. Have it. So if you had a $100,000 loss to offset it, you can only take $90,000, and you'd have a $10,000 taxable income.
Okay. But you also said the loss will be pegged to inflation. So
yes.
If we've got 3% inflation, that $100,000 loss that you're not using could now be mm-hmm. worth $103,000, just keeps going and going and going. That seems, I guess that'd be, and that's just year to year, right? So whatever the rate of inflation for the year is what that would be carry forward. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So that's not a horribly difficult number to calculate from year to year.
Though. Yeah, and that will cause a little extra cost in compliance.
Right.
It's more. I mean, it's going to be a table that a computer can probably calculate, but you got to make sure that that carry forward is being calculated correctly, and that it's being carried forward properly from year over year.
Right. Well, amortization calculations, we know how to do that, right?
That's
okay.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got here? Itemized deductions.
Yeah.
Wait. Let's. Okay. Tell me what you're talking about here.
Yeah. So one of the other key things. So going back more towards the individual side, with itemized deductions, kind of what they're going to do is a broad stroke repeal of itemized deductions as we currently know them. So the only things going forward that you're going to be able to take a deduction for would be mortgage interest on your primary residence and probably your second residence if you have that, and then unlimited charitable donations.
Oh, so unlimited, huh?
Yeah. I don't think those will be limited to that 50% of your adjusted gross income as we currently see it.
Okay. But this goes back to the individual, right? Mm-hmm. So if you own a property in an LLC, you go through the expenses. Mm-hmm. We still have our operating expenses we can take, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Okay. So this is more the individual.
Yeah, but I mean, once that investor, developer, whoever they may be, recognize that income on their 1040, this would then apply in calculating their tax.
So it seems like, you know, again, a move to put as much of your operational expenses in the entity. So if you've mm-hmm. got a company vehicle or what have you, kind of run it through the entity as opposed to the individual.
Because by the way they've said it, there's no more unreimbursed employee business expenses that you can write off as an itemized deduction.
Okay, so what's your degree of certainty on that? Because that seems like that would affect a pretty big swath of people.
I'd say it's 50-50 on what they're proposing right now. It's a matter of how they want to structure the tax system. And so it's because, I mean, just having mortgage interest and charitables, that's going to cover a lot of people still. But right. What goes away is you have no more deduction for state taxes, for real estate taxes, investment interest that you itemize, those 2% limit items. So like certain sort of legal fees, union dues, tax preparation fees.
What about all your vehicle expense?
That would go away from itemized deductions. So you'd want to house that in your LLC.
Yeah. No, there goes the leased vehicle, huh?
Yes.
Okay. What's your degree of certainty on this? Did you say?
Yeah, it's about 50-50 of it happening. But the nice thing, though, is they're going to be nice on the standard deduction. They're going to increase the overall standard deduction to be more in line with what a lot of people currently itemize with. And so it's going to reward those that don't own a home.
Gotcha.
Where they're the people that are not going to that are going to itemize are going to be those big players in donating to charity. And so, I mean, currently for like a married filing jointly couple, the standard deduction, I believe, is $12,800 for 2016. I haven't heard exactly where it's going to be, but it will be upwards of anywhere between $15,000 to $25,000 for a married filing jointly couple.
Okay. All right. That's still, I think that's, and I guess I'd have to go back and look and see how it plays out on my own stuff, but still it, mm-hmm. you know, you're used to the exercise of, filling in all these numbers and, mm-hmm. Coming up with your number and looking at the table and, you know, if this is larger than that and go to there and do this and that, and now it's just going to be, here's your deduction, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's the idea. Simplify this. Right. I mean, basically 80% of people could take their taxes to H&R Block to do those little simple calculations now and be done. But I mean, if you are still invested in real estate and you have those partnership transactions, you know, you still got to go to the CPA because, you know, there's just with the way partnership tax law is, that's a headache all by itself.
Right. Right. Okay. AMT, alternative minimum tax. Is that the, is that what that stands for?
Yes. Right. Yeah. Alternative minimum tax will be repealed. This is like a long time coming. It was intended to make sure that, you know, the rich were paying their fair share way back whenever it was implemented, and the cost of compliance and the revenue that has been generated from it, it's a teeny tiny percentage of their overall tax. revenue for the government. And this would be both corporate AMT as well as individual AMT. Those would both be gone.
Okay. And it sounds like we're moving towards more of a minimum effort to do the report anyway, so there's not mm-hmm. really a – it's kind of a mm-hmm. mute point there. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so on all of these things we've gone through, where do you see Trump as opposed to the House? Where are their biggest differences?
Right now, probably the one that Trump always talks about is the carried interest. Trump wants to see that eliminated, and that's very popular with people because everybody's, you know, banging their hands against the wall against these evil hedge fund managers that are making so much money for not doing anything. But alternatively, though, in real estate, you know, where there still is that carried interest, you know, that's a very valuable piece to that individual or person that has that because of the additional risks and rewards that come from being that what do they call it? The general partner or like a member manager of the LLC.
Okay. So when you say the carried interest, mm-hmm. make sure I understand what you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's say you have, you know, five people within an LLC that own a share in this real estate. It's, 20-20-20-20-20. But this, the general partner who's going to be on the hook for all the debt guarantees and, you know, making certain decisions, actually doing the management, they might have a preferential share of the profit and loss of the partnership. Okay. So even though their capital may be equal 20% share, this general partner is going to get this preferential rate, so they might get 30% of the profit and loss because they're bearing the risk not only from a capital side, but from I'm managing this and I'm on the hook for the debt should things go sideways because I gave a personal guarantee. And then the rest of the 80% ownership is only going to get 70% of the pie.
Right. Okay, so the carried interest, explain to me, I understand now the general partner, what's the significance on the carried interest with the general partner?
Well, the carried that general partner is getting that preferential return.
Okay.
For more than what they put into it. So the idea though is this is an attack at hedge funds and like hedge fund managers because they may only personally be invested into this particular thing for, you know, 2%. But they're getting a 5% return on the income.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so what they're saying is eliminate that benefit to them. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing too, the reason why they don't like it is because of the way it works, you're getting investment income treatment on it rather than ordinary income from the way it's structured.
So is that really the net of it? It goes from the investment income to ordinary. Is that
yeah? And that's what they want to do with the hedge funds because really those managers are operating the trader business. That's the way they're looking at it. And so why are they not paying trader business tax rates?
Gotcha. And,
I mean, which would be the ordinary income rates? Why do they get this capital gain treatment or this portfolio income treatment where you get the preferential rate with dividends currently at 15%.
Gotcha. What's your sense on that? Do you think it will go bye-bye or?
Right now I'd say there's about a 40% chance of it getting eliminated because in the better way, the House blueprint, they are silent to carried interest. And I think for good reason, because if you're a hedge fund manager, yes, I understand. But in real estate, you have a bunch of investors, and there might be that one person that's managing the property, right, making sure the investment does what it's supposed to do. And, you know, because they are on that hook for that debt guarantee that they did, that they need to bear that extra
benefit from the
benefit and extra return due to what they're doing, because it's a service in a sense to the other individuals in the partnership.
Right. Okay. So syndicator, general partner that puts it together, as opposed to the whole hedge fund, try and penalize the hedge fund as opposed to the smaller operator of a syndicate there. I get that.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of real estate lobbying in DC right now that's trying to advocate, hey, we need this, and here's why. And they're giving the economic reasons, like, you eliminate this, you eliminate the benefit of even managing real estate. And you know, because some people can't bear that economic risk. So the person that is, they do deserve a preferential rate of return, just in case they need to, you know, to pay this debt because it's been called on or there's something else going on. And that way they have that income to pay it.
Got it. Well, I guess stay tuned on that, huh?
Yeah, I think it's going to stay, but we'll see.
All right. Let's see. I see you got interest deductibility of business interests. What's your sense on that? Now, that's he wants that? Is that what I'm reading?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Trump wants to keep all sort of business interest deductible. With at one point, it sounded like he wanted to put a 50% cap, so you'd only get half of your business interests. But recently, from what I've read, he now's backed off on that cap, and so all same as it is right now, all business interest would be deductible.
Okay, so the interest from your mortgage continue. I mean, your real estate mortgage still continue to be deductible. All right, 1031.
Yeah, Trump wants to keep it.
Keep it. Well, it's interesting. After we went through that whole exercise there, it's almost I'm kind of at first I was kind of like gulping, trying to make sure I stayed conscious while we were talking there. But as we went through that exercise, kind of the model, it almost seems like if you're getting the full expense, the 1031 may not be worth as much as it would. I can't imagine they're going to allow you to double dip, are they? I mean,
no,
so if the, you go ahead.
Yeah, they won't allow the double dip because they got to make sure that there's still that certain amount of revenue coming into the government to pay its bills.
Right.
But, I mean, I understand Trump wanting to keep it, but because of where his kind of the perspective of his tax plan is going, it would just be more of a rate reduction overall. Whereas, and continue the current system, whereas, you know, Republicans in the House really want to change the method of how income is taxed.
Right. Well, and it just seems like it may be kind of more noise if you actually run the numbers. And again, we just did a simple example. I may be missing a big thing, but if you're I think really what I'm kind of sensing here is it's more about the transition from where we are now to where we're going. That's the challenge on all this. All right. Itemized deductions. What's his take on this?
He's going to be a little bit less political about it, where, you know, right now Republicans want to eliminate it all except for the mortgage interest and charitables. He's more in favor of continuing the way it has always been with there's that thing, it's called the PEAS limitations, which caps the amount of itemized deductions you can have. Right now, that's like the lesser of 3% of your adjusted gross income or 80% of your total itemized deductions. And there's certain carve-outs to where like for example, medical expenses that you're able to take as an itemized deduction, those are exempt from that limitation.
Okay. But he's still pro be able to eliminate or itemize your deductions. Mm-hmm. Period. And I guess, does it sound like it'd be either or? I mean, either you'll go itemized or you'll go with these new standard deductions?
Yeah, I see them more likely trying to go with the new standard deductions that is in the Republican blueprint. I think that has more legs under it because it's going to simplify the reporting and it's going to make compliance costs and IRS, you know, from auditing, like making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. It's going to be simpler to be like, okay, 90% of the people are taking the standard deduction. Great. We don't need to look at them for that reason.
Right.
You just have to single out that small percentage that have charitable donations, essentially.
Except for the guy that's claiming 25 kids, right?
True. True. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Infrastructure investment. What do you see there?
So one of the big things that came out of his acceptance speech, that was a big heavy topic, was he really wants to put money back into the U.S. economy to build up its infrastructure. So with roads, bridges, same stuff we've heard Obama talk about for the past 8 years, you know, that they want to see this increase improvements to building, you know, not to steal his line, make America great again.
Right.
You know, get back to those to the 1950 infrastructure boom that we had.
Well, however we get there, mm-hmm. God knows we've got a lot of aging infrastructure. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Eventually it's going to, if you don't, you know, put the plan in place, it's going to be mm-hmm. a matter of absolute necessity as opposed to planning for it. I mean, there's just a bunch of aging infrastructure.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, one of the keys to it will be modernizing it and then also maintaining what we have and doing, you know, major capital projects to fix and repair some of those big assets that, you know, if they fall or crumble, you know, the economy comes to a screeching halt in wherever that happens.
Right, right. Jonathan, I'm at the end of my little list of things you've provided here. This is, to me, it's amazing. I'm just absolutely, when we were getting ready to do this, and I was looking over it, I was just like, oh my God, everything I've just learned is going to be undone and mm-hmm. and changed in a dramatic way. Not just a mm-hmm. kind of a do-si-do sidestep where we are thing, but a real dramatic thing. On a scale of 1 to 10, everything we've talked about, do you have a strong sense of the majority of this is going to happen?
I'd say about 65% of what we've talked about will happen.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the political winds can shift and, you know, tomorrow this could turn into, you know, a 10% chance of happening. You just never know, but with where we're at and the certainty of Republicans wanting to go through with tax reform, with what they're proposing and what they've wanted to do for years, I think we have a really strong chance of seeing a good bulk of what we've talked about enacted in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, and like we've done where we've gone through and looked at them in just a kind of an over or a very cursory view. I've got to say my original sense of things was, oh my God. But as we go through it a little bit, I see it's kind of six one way, half a dozen the other, with the exception of the tax rates. I mean, if you bring those tax rates down, it seems like that to me is probably the most significant thing out of what we've talked about is the individual tax rates, the corporate tax rates, and then the minimizing that gain or what's the taxable gain there. Because the rest of it seems like it's just a simplification of the reporting, which I think everybody would welcome regardless. I obviously, if you're your livelihood is dependent on these codes, you may not be as pro it. But I think just on a conceptual basis, if you are a taxpayer and you're looking for a little more money, I think the fear is, I think, where does it prohibit or reduce one's ability to invest and make money? I guess I'm a little more hopeful than I was when we first started this. When I was looking through it, I was getting kind of a little nervous.
Yeah, it's definitely going to free things up to allow you to have a little bit more leeway on what you want to do. I mean, one of their primary things is to turn back regulations that have been, from the Republican perspective, piled on in the past 8 years, and even to some extent piled on with Bush, Clinton, and Bush 41. There's been a lot of regulation that has slowly built up, and it's culminating right now, and they really just want to wipe the slate clean, start over, and let's make things work.
Sure. No, and that makes that to me makes sense. I mean, from a standpoint of a fresh start and chance to get going again. So, well, this has been very enlightening, and I'm just trying to think, is there anything that we didn't talk about that came to mind while we were talking?
I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, if anything, it's just more little nitty-gritty details that, in the grand scheme of things, just for your CPA to worry about. So,
well, maybe you would know where one could find a good CPA, huh? How would you recommend that people get in touch with you if they've got more questions?
Yeah. You can email me at jmcguire, that's JMCGUIRE, at Aldrich Advisors, and that's ALDRICH advisors.com.
Okay, and I'll be sure to put that in the show notes and link that to the show notes there. Jonathan, I've enjoyed it again, and I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and let's do it again soon.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure.
Wow. Change is coming, and it's coming fast. I think things will be okay, but I always have a little bit of suspicion, and maybe it's fear or I don't know, a sense that things won't be better for me. But I'm curious to see how it all plays out after talking with Jonathan. I think it'll be all right. Be sure to reach out to Jonathan at Aldrich Advisors if you have any questions. His email is in the show notes. It's jmcguire@aldrichadvisors.com. That's all we've got for you this week. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.